Welcome back to Mysterious Goings On. Hey, it's me, Alex. And you know, the past year or so, the name of the game on this show has been creativity. And it harkens back to me starting this show in 2016 thinking I would do one thing with it. And I did. I talked about my writing and I talked to other writers. But I got to be honest with you, after a while, a couple of years of it, I got a little bored with it. I got a little bored with the sound of my own voice. Hope that doesn't happen to you. I got a little bored with my subject matter. And I just remember it was lunch or maybe it was a happy hour. Anyway, it was with a very good friend of mine, and his name is Mike Brown, who is our guest today, by the way. And Mike Brown and I were talking, and it wasn't even about my podcast, but he was so fired up to talk about what he does for a living, which is creative strategy and all these things we're going to talk about. But the main thing that I derived from it was just that he looks at life, and he looks at work, and he looks at faith, and he looks at everything from a completely different end of the telescope than I do. And I just remember I had an epiphany not far after that encounter chatting with my buddy Mike, where I thought, you know, why don't I start talking about the creative process on Mysterious Goings On? Why don't I start talking about me being a creative individual? Why am I not talking to creative people? Why am I not talking to people, in fact, who don't even think they're creative, but in fact manifest creativity to succeed in their daily lives and careers? So that's a long wind up to say, welcome to Mike Brown, founder of Brain Zooming. He's an author and strategist. He specializes in operationalizing design thinking. That sounds really heavy, so we're going to have him explain it. Mike Brown, welcome to Mysterious Goings On.
Thank you, Alex. I am excited to be here. And I've already learned something. This whole notion of I look at things from the opposite end of the telescope than you do, that's why everything I see is far away. So thank you. I'm going to flip it around, and everything will appear big and close.
Well, now you're under the microscope. How about that?
I don't know. let me get the telescope down first.
Yeah, it's that big orange thing. It's a long orange tube in your office, and we'll get to oranges shortly here in the broadcast. But Mike Brown, so glad to have you on the show, because I really mean what I say when you even turn creativity for me on its head. Before I flatter you too much, I've got some questions about it, but maybe it would help, though, if you would tell us a little bit about what you do, what Brain Zooming is. Just kind of give us the Cliff's Notes, and then we can dig a little deeper there.
Okay, great. Yeah, Brain Zooming's 10 years old. Basically started it coming out of the corporate world, where I was doing strategic planning and research, and in a trucking company where people didn't want to be strategic, they really struggled with this, and tried to give them ways to look at the market in a different fashion, look at the opportunities in front of them, and introduce creativity, not in an overt way, but just through exercises and giving them that freedom to take their knowledge, but couple it with some structure and some exercises that opened up new possibilities. And 10 years ago, rolled that out and started to do it for other companies. So it's interesting. We continue to learn what Brain Zooming is, really. Even just a month ago, we were talking about, we do strategy and it's creative and there's innovation. And to some extent, I have segmented those things as different parts of what we do, and as we talk through it among the team, really realize that no matter where you, if you think of Brain Zooming as a soup, no matter where you dip that ladle in, there's some mix of strategy, creativity, and innovation all there. Maybe it's more strategic, a little bit less of the other two, or maybe it's more creative, less of the other two, but that's all there. So yeah, we try and bring creativity to business people, to help them realize that even if they don't view themselves as classically creative, they don't write books, they don't do art, they don't play music, they don't do something that you would think of as creative, they're still absolutely creative, and their business results will be better through that application of creativity.
Can you give me just kind of a walkthrough then about what type of company might contact you and what their problems may be and how you would approach it?
Yeah, The thing that's been really cool is it's been companies across industries. It is not industry specific. It tends to be more the person who's reaching out where they understand that they want to engage audiences, whether that's employees and or customers or even other audiences. They want to engage them in different ways. They want their input into strategy. They want something that's more collaborative. They want something that's more fun even, but they haven't figured out a way to do it. And we come in typically with that type of leader and say, you know what? We've got a way to do this. This is what we specialize in. We're not the type of company that's going to come in and say, we know more about your industry. We're smarter about your industry than you are. We're bringing in process expertise to basically say, you know a lot inside your company. There's a lot of great ideas inside of your company. The biggest challenge is to free up your people to share those so that you can incorporate those into your strategy. So it tends to be maybe medium-sized and bigger companies because they see more value or they get more value out of bringing in a bigger audience. All the techniques work for entrepreneurs and solopreneurs and small businesses. We're just reaching out to them in different ways through the blog where they can go download things or even products we're starting to introduce so that the tools and techniques are packaged up in the right way for them.
Yeah, I mean, that blog is incredible. There's hundreds of thousands of words on this blog and just about all of them useful. So it's a really nice thing. No, but it's tremendous. And your recent book, Idea Magnets, which is phenomenal. That came out, about a year and a half ago, I think, right? And
yeah,
it's phenomenal. And we can talk about that in a moment. But, you know, I wanted to get to that bit. It kind of reminds me, years ago, I was working for a very large nonprofit, a national nonprofit, and we were managing a couple of states, and I was communications director. And I just remember my boss, she was the executive director, and she said she wanted me to do something. And I wasn't clear what she wanted or how she wanted it done. And she just kind of looked slightly annoyed and just said, well, just use your creativity and figure it out. And I remember thinking, you know, I guess my mind's semi-creative. I remember thinking, I don't think that came with my desk set. I looked in my drawers and I didn't see a creativity in it. But is this the type of person you often deal with? It's maybe somebody who's not the CEO, but the CEO is bearing down on them to find creative answers. They throw them in a conference room, let's say, and say, let's start brainstorming so we can get a better strategy out of this deal. Do you get people like that or like me who had the CEO throw that kind of expectation at them and they maybe not panicking, but certainly are looking around for a lifeline?
That's interesting. We tend to work with those people, but they tend not to be the ones that hire us. We tend to be hired by the person, whether that's the CEO or a VP in the company, who has that vision for they want something done differently. They want something done more innovatively. A lot of times they have somebody working for them who they feel isn't in the place to make that happen. So we come in and we're engaged with the more senior person, but there's a mentorship and a learning component to what we do that we're supposed to develop that person who has been given that charge and help them along and help them to see in new ways and basically leave them stronger and more capable just through learning and tools after we're done with the engagement, for sure.
Okay, so actually what you're saying is that it's typically a CEO or a person in that kind of leadership position who has their hand on the levers of budget to bring in somebody, and they're trying to actually empower and assist people that are working for them. Am I hearing that correctly? That's how it works more often.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
So if you're brought into that, and you say you've been doing this for 10 years, you know, you and I both started our companies around the same time.
Right.
Interesting. And we've known each other at least that long. By the way, everybody, Mike and I met just through social media. We were in the same town, Kansas City, but we met through Twitter and social media. We just kept turning up in each other's timelines and conversations. And we finally met and just clicked. And we've since then, we've even gone and spoken together at a seminar in Curacao. Remember that? Oh my gosh.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We've traveled together often. It's always a good time. It's sometimes better than others.
Who say we turned up in each other's Twitter feeds and then we turned up at the same happy hour, and then that's where we actually met in person.
That's
So,
right.
yeah.
That's right. That's right. Oh my gosh, it was so great. We get together as often as we can, not nearly enough, and talk about these things. But, you know, so it impresses me that you've built a whole, not only just a career and a consulting kind of business, but I mean, you've got a business there. When you say the Brain Zooming Group, there's several of you involved, and each person involved working with you, they may not work with you on a daily basis, but they bring something else to the table that helps Brain Zooming help a wide variety of clients, like you said. Because, I mean, just checking out your website, I mean, I know that Brain Zooming has helped companies. I don't know if you can even name very many of them, but they ranged from educational institutions to, well, what else? What else are we talking about here?
I mean, from industrial, heavy industrial manufacturing to service businesses, and there's a heavy dimension of service businesses. Just, I've been a services marketer most of my career. I was in, worked at a transportation company for 18 years. Industry piece of it is sort of less of it for us. It tends to be another way I've described our clients is companies that are almost, they're so smart and so successful at what they do in their industries. They're looking ahead and they're perceptive enough to be able to say the things that have made us successful are not going to continue that success in the future. We've got to start looking at change right now. So there are very few companies we work with that are turnaround situations. They're the people who are looking out into the future and knowing we can't just stay this course and think that that's going to continue to work. So that's fun because they maybe have resources, but they have typically a little bit of room to maneuver that a company that's under the gun, things aren't going well, we've stayed with what we've done for too long, they don't have. So it works out really nicely that way.
Right. And you know, it's interesting too. You and I were talking, was it around the holidays we had lunch? Isn't that right? And
It was.
I was talking to you about my day job, my crisis communications planning that I'm doing, and I'm doing a lot of speaking about it. And everybody, Mike gave me a tremendous idea to use that I just used, by the way, Mike, in a presentation I did last week to a delegation from Estonia, believe it or not, here in town.
Whoa.
Yeah, I was
Whoa.
working with a State Department related NGO, and they wanted a crisis communications expert. And you know, so what I did, everybody, Mike gave me this thing, and he's talking about here about companies that are looking ahead. Mike said, "Are you talking about black swan events?" And I was like, "Isn't that movie with Natalie Portman?" And I mean, I talked about it when I saw it, but you know, no. Anyway, no. And he's like, "No, but a black swan event." And Mike, you can say it better than me, but a black swan event is what?
It's basically one of those events that happens that you really can't predict it ahead of time, but it brings about a massive shift in how things are done. So, and I don't remember the author of the book. You can Google it and find it. Put, Black Swan movie instead of Black Swan book, and you'll find it. But he says they're not predictable. So it's like the internet and how that's changed business. It's like 9/11, two planes fly into these buildings. And it fundamentally shapes things. And we had a client who came to us. It was a state forestry association. Talk about something that we have no background in, but the process works. And the state forester had said, "I need to think about black swans. I've read the book. I want to incorporate exercises." And the challenge is, how do you get an exercise around something that isn't predictable? And that led to, and I'll, Alex, since you've used it most recently, I'll let you talk about what that example is and sort of what unlocked the possibilities.
It was so great. So Mike tells me, just, you know, think about, well, this.
It can't be.
What is it?
It can't be.
What did you do, Ray?
Oh, shit.
It's the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
Huh. Okay, so I use this idea that Mike gave me. He says, try and illustrate to your audiences what a Black Swan event, but do it in a way that's sticky, in a way that's funny, in a way that kind of lifts the mood, because Black Swan events are oftentimes, most of the examples are pretty awful, you know, like 9/11 is not a fun example, but the internet's not necessarily a bad example, although some might argue with that. But what I did was I said to my audience, I said, you know, explaining a Black Swan event, I said, so think about this, you know, you can't, it's almost an enigma because you're being forced to think about something that has never happened before, right? And so, of course, and use the example from Ghostbusters of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, because they knew that Zool was going to destroy everything using their minds against them. So he's like, everybody, clear your mind. Think of nothing that could kill us, nothing that could hurt us, basically. And, of course, Ray thinks of Mr. Stay Puft. So they get like a 60-story Mr. Stay Puft destroying New York. I'm in this room of dignitaries from Estonia. And they all, of course, have seen Ghostbusters anyway, and they laughed, but they warmed up to it, and I could see the wheels turning. I could see that there was some delight in their eyes because it was something. In fact, it was kind of a mini Black Swan event that they did not expect from this talk they were getting ready to hear. Correct? You know, they weren't expecting to hear from, you know, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. So I don't mean to make light, but it really was nice for me too because it kind of helped break the ice. It's early in my presentation, so Mike, thank you for that. It was wonderful.
You're welcome. And I mean, the point of it is, often the things that are going to be most problematic are the things that we've forgotten about, or the things that seem safe and seem to always work. But when those go south, that's the problem, whether that's in communication and it creates a crisis situation, or we use that exercise with a client that was looking at a joint venture, and through that exercise found out they had a manufacturing operation that had been up and running for a year and a half. They had no crisis plan. They had no plan for business interruption. It's like, oh my gosh, we need this. So it's just an interesting way. And we constantly try and do that, to not come in with, here's the Porter Five Forces analysis, and here's every classic business strategy structure, because people don't necessarily know those. They can be off-putting, they can be uncomfortable. We instead try and figure out what's a way to allow them to use the knowledge that they have, but make it very easy for them to shift it in a way that helps them develop strategy, or helps them get to disruptive innovation, or some other type of breakthrough thinking. So we call it the brainstorming R&D lab, but we're always thinking about what's an easier way for somebody to figure this stuff out.
And it's empowering. You know, I was reading, I've got my dog-eared edition of Idea Magnets, Mike Brown's book, Seven Strategies for Cultivating and Attracting Creative Business Leaders. Around page 59, attracting many ideas in action here. And if you don't mind, Mike, I'm going to quote you here. I regularly hear executives say the time their organizations spend considering new ideas is unsuccessful. They're looking for the, quote, next big idea, unquote, and it never materializes. That creates disappointment, frustration, and a resistance to spend time considering potentially innovative ideas. Mike goes on to say, my response is always to expect that the next big idea will be elusive when that aspiration is wrapped into a meeting title and objective. Putting the phrase next big in front of idea sends a clear message. Don't suggest an idea unless it's going to be all caps big. And I think that alone, that really stood out to me, is because I've been stuck in these, I call them gulags, you know, these horrible conference rooms where you're let's brainstorm on strategy, and everybody's under so much damn pressure, right, to be brilliant. And when you introduce these concepts like you have about black swans, just adding a black swan to it, it's like nobody can be wrong about a black swan, is what I'm trying to get to here with this, right? I mean, who is to say, right? Who is to say that we might have the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man attack the city. I mean, we don't know. So
We don't.
But it takes the pressure off, doesn't it? Is that right? Is that kind of what you were getting at with that quote that I just dropped there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I talk about this, whether it's a workshop with a client where we're developing strategy, or we're, you know, teaching the techniques to people, I say, if a boss comes in and says, let's come up with the next big idea. What are your big ideas? I said, we all know the internal conversation in our head is, well, I've got an idea. but I'm not sure it's a big idea. I mean, I like it. I think it's a really good idea, but you know, if I throw it out there, and what if other people don't think it's big, and then they're going to look at me and they're going to groan, and it's going to be really embarrassing. And this idea I thought, and nothing's really going to happen. And then they go, yeah, no, I don't have any ideas. And that, those instances, that conversation in somebody's head is what kills, you know, what may be a really big idea or maybe a possibility that triggers something for somebody else.
Exactly.
That gets them to idea. So yeah, we never want to say an idea needs to be a certain thing. Just share pieces, parts, and let those be inspirations for other people. And the way that we, in essence, get to bigger ideas is to use what we call bigger questions. So a question that stretches the boundary, stretches permissions, shuts down really comfortable, familiar options. So somebody has to think about it in different ways. And we can watch the energy and the excitement and the size of possibilities come out from a group based on the size of questions. And we have some small questions that, you know, maybe will get people comfortable and get started with, and bigger questions. And we manage the process by the size of questions that we use with a group to help them get to what they need to have happen.
Do you typically get any resistance when you come in? Even everybody, if you know Mike, there's nothing off-putting about, you know what, I love what you said earlier. You don't walk in and announce, we're the experts. Everybody just settle down. We got this. You don't do that. It's a different rate. But do you still have a lot of, how long do you have to typically work on barriers? Or are people so receptive and ready for you that there's not a barrier when you walk in the room?
You know, Alex, you don't necessarily know going in. And we spend a lot of time with clients talking ahead of time about who's going to be there, managing the mix of people so that it's not all the same executive person, that there's diversity, there's different levels of people, they have different perspectives, and talking about what the dynamics are. You know, I did a workshop with a government organization where, you know, set up sort of a funny opening, and a guy at the very start said, what business do you have talking to us? You haven't been the government. You don't understand us. You know, what credibility do you have? And I was like, okay, thank you for throwing a 100-mile-an-hour fastball at my head 2 minutes into this thing. And I explained to him, I said, well, from a corporate perspective, some of the dynamics were different, and let's get through this workshop. And at the end of it, he's like, oh my gosh, you know, can I buy your book? And this was before the book. Conversely, we just did a gig a couple of weeks ago, and the CEO told us, our people have never done anything like this. They're going to come in skeptical. They're going to be very suspicious of this.
Right.
You're going to need to really warm them up however you can to get them to participate. And in that case, we did a thing that I may have done this when I spoke to a PR group that you had, but basically asked, okay, who in the group are artists? And if, you know, I think of 32 people, one person raised a hand that he sort of drew things.
Right.
I said, well, that's interesting. The rest of you don't think you're artists. I said, who knows numbers? And, well, everybody raises their hand. You know, we can write numbers. I said, great. And I taught them how to draw a cartoon based purely on numbers. And they were all artists all of a sudden. And I used that as the setup to say, you know what? I don't need you to be branding experts. I don't need you to be marketing experts. I don't need you to worry about, oh, here's how they probably want me to say things. I said, what I need from you, I need your perspectives. I need your experience. I need your honest sense of here's the good things and the bad things in this company. That's what we need. We're the marketing people. We're the branding people. We'll deal with all the rest of it. And it was fantastic, Alex. It was a 2 half-day workshop. At the end of the first day, but particularly the morning of the second, they all gave their feedback. And they're like, well, it was great brain zooming. They really helped us. I said, I can throw exercises at you to help you think about things in new ways. I said, that's like 5%. I said, what made the difference here is your energy, your passion, your commitment, your eagerness to see this company improve. And I said, you guys made the difference. That's the 95%. So we just have to be ready with as much prep as we can, but then be ready to flex and adapt to what that group is, to bring them along so that they feel very comfortable diving in and participating and aren't holding back.
You know, I learned this also from you, I believe, because just back to the Estonians again. I mean, these were the people from the Ministry of Justice, the police chiefs. They were here in the country to learn about, well, they had a very, very bad money laundering scandal the past couple of years in Estonia, and they're trying very hard to figure out how to get ahead of that and how to handle that and how to communicate about that. And anyway, they were mostly seeing law enforcement and Federal Reserve people while they're here, but they had time for a crisis person. And but I looked at the people they were seeing for the 3 days they were here, right? And I was the only one who was basically a civilian. And the first thing I said is, I said, before I get started, I want to say one thing, and that is that I am not a law enforcement professional. I am not a legal professional. I am not a government professional. I am not a banking professional. But I have worked with all of those professions in my career to help them communicate better. And I hope that that will work with us today. And I mean, you know, I told you earlier how I could kind of see people's, you could tell when a room, when you have a room, when you're losing a room, you know what I mean? When they're coming back, and I could see immediately there was a kind of a, okay, this guy's not going to come Bigfoot us. He's not going to act like a big fancy American PR dude, whatever that might be. I don't know. But it was beneficial, and it kind of helped me spend the next 2 hours speaking with them, because they understood that I knew what I didn't know.
Right.
And it gave me room to talk about the things I did know. And it gave me room to ask questions. I felt very good about that strategy, and it helped me when I could see their wheels turning a little bit when I had asked them certain questions. And in fact, there were discussions amongst each other. Not like they weren't listening to me. I mean, like, I'd ask a question and one would say something, another would say, all respect, no. It wasn't an argument. It was very respectful. But I loved that, because I think I was having kind of a nice mini session for them there in that regard. I wasn't just speaking at them. Anyway, I didn't mean to go on a tangent there, but I think that's some of the things I probably have picked up from you over the years and from reading your books. And of course, it didn't hurt that just recently I had been through your online strategy course, and it's a strategy for success, strategic planning made simple. This great e-course you've done. You know, I wrote you up a little write-up about it because I was just raving about it, because I thought it was so good. And I think I said it literally changed the way I think about strategic thinking, planning, implementation for my clients. I think at one point to me, I also had the realization that it's like, my buddy Mike is not only a thought leader in creativity and doing these things, but he's making a living through his creativity that is so different than the other people I know who make a living through creativity, authors and singers and photographers and things like that. Have you ever run into anyone who does what you do?
I mean, there are a lot of firms and individuals that do strategy, that, you know, claim to do aspects of what we do. For us, I think it is that we approach it in a different way. I mean, what was interesting is over the last few years, where we've had clients who have trotted out the names of the biggest consulting companies in the world and said, we use them on the last assignment we had or the last strategic plan that we had. And now we've turned to you guys. And it's like, we're competing in the right groups. I mean, those are the names I want to show up around. But the recognition is, when they've used those top tier consultants, the largest ones, their people don't learn anything. Because they just bring in these smart people, and they have a vested interest in not sharing the techniques or not helping the team learn. They get access to senior people on a very limited basis, and then it's a bunch of young MBAs who chalk up a whole bunch of hours. And, you know, the incentives often aren't to be efficient and get in and get out. It's to stick around. And I tell people that what we do is different, I think, because I created it on the client side. I didn't create it on the outside as a consulting business. I created the type of organization inside the company that I knew people would want to work with. And then as I took that outside, it's been interesting because there are challenges from a business model standpoint, because our business model isn't designed in a lot of the ways that consulting companies are that are really advantageous to them. It's designed more for the benefit of the client.
Imagine
So,
that.
yeah. So it creates some business challenges for us, because a lot of times we'll work with a client and instead of a repeat engagement, they'll go, "This is fantastic. Now we've got 5 years worth of stuff. We loved it. We'll see you in 5 years." It's like, well, there's other stuff we could do. But when I hear about a client who was able to learn so much by working with us that they could do it themselves the next year, I'm actually more gratified by that, because that's the stuff that's going to last. It's going to be teaching people how to do this, helping them be more confident, to be more strategic and creative and innovative, because that gets passed on to other people.
Yeah.
The repeat engagements, yeah, that's nice and it's more dollars right now, but for me, it's a lot more about helping as many people be better business people as we can. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. I feel the same way because when I create a crisis communication plan, I create it in such a way where it's organic enough to, and it's explained enough as we go through the process that when it's done, there's not much they need me for. They can come back quarterly and update it. They can rehearse it. They might want me to check things out here and there, but basically, I'm giving them the skills that I know and the experience, and it's in a format where they can expand it if necessary, or pare it down. So I've kind of got the same deal, but I'm with you. The money is so well spent from my end and what I do. If it works once, it's been worth every penny, right? Especially in crisis. But with your clients, if they get that big idea or those big ideas or 5 years worth of ideas they can work on or strategy they can refine. So I do feel your pain as a business owner where you're like, I gratified, I helped, and you are, I know you are, but
Yeah.
you've still got cash flow, Let me ask you really quickly though about just the your inner self here, not your work self, but I know you draw. In fact, you're the first person I ever sat down with who, instead of taking word notes, you draw pictures a lot. And it just, the first few times you did that, I got to confess, I was enchanted by it because it was so cool. And you're a good cartoonist and you draw well. But it just also, I thought, man, that's a little off. That's a little different. That's really strange. But so there's that. So you draw, but you also play guitar, do you not? What else do you do for your own personal creativity and your sanity, those things.
Yeah, and it varies. So right now it's more guitar playing and actually playing cigar box guitars, if you can imagine
Really?
that. I've been introduced to those in the last year down in Huntsville, Alabama. So Tara Bacchus Mello, who helped me put idea magnets together, she and her husband, their family live in Huntsville, and I was down there earlier in 2019, and they said, "We're going to take you to the cigar box guitar store." I was like, "What the hell is that? I don't." And these are guitars that are made out of cigar boxes. They're typically three strings. They have an open tuning. And her husband later got into building these. And the last time down there, he built an orange guitar for me,
Oh,
an
my
orange
goodness.
cigar box guitar. It has a headstock like a Fender Telecaster, like my other main guitar is. And I was actually this morning, I plugging it in and trying to find the dials on my Fender amp that would give it the best sound. But he created a, it's essentially like a dobro, which is a metal type guitar that has a resonator in it, and it is so much fun to play. So that has opened guitar back up to me in the last year, that I hadn't picked up my guitar in 5 or 6 years. I don't draw as much right now, probably, just because the visual side of creativity goes into creating ebooks and images and photos for the blog. And it's funny, writing the blog when I was in the corporate world, because I started it before the company existed. Actually, BrainZooming as a website predated the company. That was really creative for me, and now that it's more part of the business, it's tougher for me to write right now. So, I tend to I tell people I'm a hack at a lot of things. So, I mean, there are people who are very specialized in one thing and they excel at it. I'm one of those people that I'm like fair to middling in a variety of things. So my wife had been gone late last year and I got into cooking and that became my creative thing. I was, and I never cooked, but it was like, oh, well, I've watched a lot of Chopped episodes. So, I would look at what's in the kitchen and try and make stuff up, so, which was really, really wild and new for me. So, for me, it's a lot of times just what is that distraction and what can I do differently? But I think to a great extent for me, it's got to turn into something. It's got to lead to something. I'm not very good at just going off and doing something that's relaxing and creative. I describe myself as a utilitarian creative. There's got to be an end objective for it. Even if it's just teaching myself a new song on the guitar. So yeah, it varies based on the time and place what I'm doing to relax and be creative.
Does your wife like your cooking?
I don't cook now that she's back.
Oh,
That
utilitarian
was
again.
yeah, it was purely when I was by myself and the kitchen could be a disaster, and that was okay until I got around to fixing it.
I'm like you in that I didn't really know how to cook, but I've taught myself how to. I smoke meats for barbecue. I mean, living in Kansas City, I figured I had to learn when I moved here years ago. I've been doing it for over 10 years, and I'm finally decent at two or three different dishes. But I've also started like you to just to give my wife a break, who doesn't particularly. She's a good cook, but doesn't particularly want to cook all the time. So I start cooking, and I like to create new stuff, and it's a really nice thing. And cooking just as a thought exercise. You've got to organize. You got to be organized. You got to plan. I mean, if you want the meal to come out at the same time, I mean, you don't want to start cooking the rice when the steak is done or whatever. You know what I'm saying? You want to try time everything just right. These are all skills that have benefited me in other aspects of my life. So, yeah, well, it's interesting because, yeah, when I first met you, I was going to say the other thing besides the drawing, though, is you wrote like a madman constantly. You're always blogging, and of course, you're not nearly on social media as much either. You just don't have the time, gosh darn it, because you're so busy, I guess.
It's changed, and some of those things, they're just not as much fun. So, I mean, I take a boatload of pictures now, which I didn't used to, but I don't so much share them on social as much as it becomes a reserve of images for blog posts or ebooks or things like that. So I'm sort of have this visual vocabulary for brain zooming that, like if I go to a city, like I was in Springfield, Massachusetts for this, the thing I was talking about, the workshop recently, it was by the Dr. Seuss Museum. So I'm like going over there and taking pictures and just walking around going, okay, visually, this represents something and that could go into a blog post. But yeah, it's funny when you talk about cooking. My folks had a restaurant. We had a restaurant when I was growing up. So I learned to cook in restaurant quantities. So I make like huge things of soup. I can make turkey and dressing. But there's my uncle who taught me there were never recipes. So it's funny when you're talking about planning, the stuff I was making, there were never recipes. I was making them up as I went
Oh
along.
my goodness.
Yeah, so there's an improv. There's an improv theme, I guess, that maybe is a through line in my life of take what you've been presented with, say yes to it, and make the best out of it, but be prepared for those surprises, or be prepared for it to turn into something else, or be prepared for somebody else to take hold of it and do something different with it, and that's okay. That's part of why I publish so much on the blog. I've had people use exercises and things that are on the blog that we haven't used yet, and they'll come back and tell me how it worked. It's like that's what I love. It's to just throw ideas out there and see what somebody else can do with it.
Is that where idea magnets comes from?
Yeah, idea magnets came from it was a fundamental switch for me that happened within brain zooming. I always tended to match up with people I realized who were creative geniuses. I mean, just sort of poured out these amazing ideas. And I was the person who would go, okay, yeah, here's how we're going to operationalize that. Here's how we'll go make that happen. And I can get you that, but I can't get you that. And I love that. I love the nuts and bolts side of bringing these things to life. And I could be the cheerleader for it and convey the vision and the strategy. When I started brain zooming, all of a sudden I didn't have that creative genius anymore. And I had clients looking to me. And a lot of my writing about creativity and innovation up to that point had been, don't do these things, or here's how to get out of the roadblocks. Because right. That was sort of my background, was the nose of innovation. And how do you get past those? Idea magnets, I basically took and flipped all those nose to the positive side. And in these idea magnets I'd worked with, it's like, what did they do? How do they come up with these ideas? How do they bring it about, and how do they attract other people to their visions? And that's where idea magnets came about. I call it it's a story from the road. It was my journey of, I need to reposition myself, not just from a marketing standpoint, but from how I approach business and look at things in a different way. And we had debates in putting the book together. It was like, okay, am I writing about myself as an idea magnet or in a person aspiring to it, or I'm just not even an idea magnet, so these are the things I use. And I've gotten more comfortable with the idea of, oh, people see you as that, mm-hmm. although I don't know that I necessarily see myself as that, certainly all the time. I guess I do more of the time than I used to. So, yeah, it was sort of my self-help guide into strategy, creativity, and innovation for the other people who don't feel like they're one or all of those things.
I think you're definitely an idea magnet as far as I'm concerned. I highly recommend that book. And if you want more information on that, listeners, it's you can go to ideamagnets.com. Isn't that right, Mike? If they want to look
yeah,
into that.
Absolutely.
You know, I if you don't mind, can I do a lightning round thing here? I was wondering, do you have any advice? Okay, let's just say that the listener is... Let's not even talk about the world of work necessarily, if that's okay. What if they're a writer who is got the dreaded writer's block, or they're a musician, or maybe it's actually a creative person who typically listens to this show. Is there some lesson you can deliver to them? Is there some advice you can give them to help them break through and have different ideas and maybe accidentally almost find that next big idea, if that's not putting you on the spot too much?
The thing I generally recommend to people that I think works really well and can be really productive is to use an analogy. So if you can take your situation and think about who else, you know, whether that's a company or an individual or a type of person or a celebrity, who else addresses something that's like this, and how would they approach it? What types of ideas would they bring to it? And what's cool about that is it gives you a little bit of personal self-freedom from feeling like, you know, you've got yourself under your own gun to come up with something. It also allows you to do a little bit of role playing from another person's perspective, which can be freeing, and just taking on that role can help you think about things as well. So, you know, if I were writing a mystery book and I felt like, okay, I don't really know where to go with these characters, or I don't know where I want to go with the story next, I would think about, well, who are other people who have to deal with the unknown and figure that out? Well, a police detective does. A parent who's got a child that is unpredictable may have to come up with that. Maybe a business that's trying to forecast what its future is going to be and what's going to happen in the market. Those are three situations that to some extent are having to figure out a mystery and advance it. So maybe I play that role and think about, well, how would they write the next chapter of this book, or how would they develop this character, and then use that as the jumping off point to hopefully get you around that block.
Oh, that's great advice. I love that. I'll definitely be using that advice. I'll need it, I'm sure. Well, Mike, gosh, you've been so generous with your time. But how, if people want to learn more, where's your blog? Maybe that's the first place people should start, would you think?
Brainzooming.com. And over on the right, it says resources and library. We call it a library now, but and it's also on the homepage as well. If you scroll down, that gets you into the blog. The Strategy for Success course you talked about, folks can find that on the website. They can get to Idea Magnets through brainzooming.com or to ideamagnets.com as well.
Yeah, obviously Mike is a dear friend, but I mean it when I say it. He is the guy to go to. Brainzooming is the process to use to help you generate innovative ideas on an ongoing basis. I'll tell you, it's such good stuff, no matter what, whether you're doing it at work or for your own creative juices. So I recommend you check it out. My good friend, Mike Brown, thank you so much for appearing here on Mysterious Goings On.
Alex, thank you so much. It was a pleasure, and I'm so glad we got to do this. Thank you.
You bet. And listeners, we're going to continue to talk creativity going forward, but don't forget to look behind you once in a while. Don't forget that we've already talked to an entrepreneurial co-working expert. We've talked to several writers, both fiction and nonfiction. We've talked to musicians, photographers, veteran broadcasters. There's so many people we've spoken with, been so fortunate to speak with, just like Mike Brown, who can give you some tips and ideas on creativity and on insights into their lives that I think you'll find pretty interesting. And once in a while, yeah, you'll still get a monologue from yours truly about my latest aches and pains. But for this week, we're all booked up, and I've got to go reread my copy of Idea Magnets. And until next time, keep reading.
It's a great time to get a great deal on a new car when you get approved for an auto loan from PenFed. Our Powered by True Car rates are as low as 1.39% APR on new vehicles. Finance for a longer term to lower your monthly bill. Plus, take up to 60 days to schedule your first payment. Join PenFed, and together, we'll keep you moving forward. Anyone can apply. Visit PenFed.org/auto or call 1-800-247-5626. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA. It's a great time to get a great deal on a new car when you get approved for an auto loan from PenFed. Our Powered by True Car rates are as low as 1.39% APR on new vehicles. Finance for a longer term to lower your monthly bill. Plus, take up to 60 days to schedule your first payment. Join PenFed, and together, we'll keep you moving forward. Anyone can apply. Visit PenFed.org/auto or call 1-800-247-5626. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed, insured by NCUA.